we don't have any worries. It's rock solid. And we were facing like kind of maybe west, I think, to be honest. So we were early in the day. I was like, it's not really going to heat up that much. It's fine. But then when we got way up high to the top of the pass, the pass is two things. It's higher, so it's colder, but also it's a wind tunnel. And so the wind always gets funneled through there and kept the snow from getting as hot. So we didn't have that bomber 7 to 5 inches of crust. And then we got down to like 2 to 3 inches of crust. And the skiers who were able to do kick turns, they were staying on top. But because my crew wasn't so good at kick turns, we were walking in crampons with skis on the back. And we were punching through that eggshell crust. And we hit the old snow layer and got avalanched.
Welcome to All Aspects, a podcast where we explore, discuss, and celebrate adventure culture and outdoor lifestyle. It is our mission to educate, inform, and entertain our fellow adventurers about the inherent risks that surround us every time we go outside to play, and to provide you with the knowledge and tools to help you do the things you love the most in the safest way possible. All Aspects is brought to you by Aspect Abbey. Aspect Abbey is on a mission to save lives by making avalanche safety simple. It is the only app that tells you where the high and low risk zones are for today's avalanche danger. With a suite of built-in tools like forecast verification, slope meter, and gear checklist, Aspect Abbey is the new safety standard for avalanche risk management. Remember, there are dozens of apps that get you into the backcountry, but there's only one that's designed to bring you home, and that's Aspect Abbey. Go to aspectabbey.com to learn more or download the app to start your 30-day free trial. Thank you, Aspect Abbey, for making this show possible, and thank you for listening. All right, let's get to the show.
Welcome back to All Aspects. Jeff, today it's just you and me. Nice to be back with just a Dave and Jeff show. And this week, I wanted to talk about spring skiing safety and risk management because it's kind of ironic. It just snowed 8 inches outside and it's supposed to snow all weekend. But before that, we were in a huge corn cycle. We were getting like 45 degree days, which was really, really nice. But it does lead to a whole new set of problems and issues, things that we need to keep track of and that sort of thing. So I figured this week it'd be good for us to cover ski touring and playing in the backcountry in the spring. Maybe we could do a little bit of myth busting about, you know, snow safety and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then maybe give people some action items moving forward, easy things that they can keep their eyes out for, etc. How's that sound to you?
That sounds great. Oftentimes in life, our perception lags behind reality. It takes a while. And we're in this weird situation right now where, you know, it's been, you know, this is probably going to go down as the hottest winter on record throughout Colorado by a lot. And, you know, like you said, this last week, we were in a serious corn cycle with like 7 inches of melt freeze crust we were riding on. But that's only on the sunny aspects like south and southwest. And if you go to the shady aspects, particularly in Colorado, when you're on a steep slope like Black Diamond, double Black Diamond, 30 to 45 degrees, it's not getting that solar gain. And in Colorado, it's all about the sun because it's so high and dry that if you're at, say, 11,000 feet and above, and you're on steep northeast, north and northwest, it's going to stay cold, dry snow until maybe the last week of April. And then finally, if this is the steep north-facing slope, finally the sun, finally the sun gets high enough in the sky that the solar radiation can actually affect the snowpack. Certainly on east, south, and west, it'll have a big effect. South and southwest are the most sun affected. So it's like a tale of two cities right now. You know, a lot of the steep slopes, you know, the steeper the slope, the more the sun hits directly. And if it's low angle south facing, it's more indirect and bounces off. So those steep, low elevation, mid elevation slopes are going to corn up the fastest. But if the sun's on the other side and it's north facing, it's the opposite. The flats and shallow slopes get more sun. You get a little sun crust. and then the steep ones are going to stay dry. So basically what we've got is our persistent slab problem is not really going away. It's kind of a bummer. And it's still being skier triggered on the aspects that don't have a lot of corn.
Yeah. And can we just really quickly, can we just kind of explain the breakdown of when we are skiing on corn, what we want to be looking for, right? Because there is, yeah, well, especially here, right? On that south facing, well, let's make this even more specific. So if we're going to go corn harvesting, right? And we're going to stick to those south facing, yeah, southwest kind of slopes that you're talking about. We need to be really mindful that, you know, ice bridge that we're standing on the whole way, like up the face, is thick enough to support us, even if with like 2 inches of slush or like corn on top of it, right? Can you, yep, kind of explain why that is and how that works?
Sure. Let's say there's some weak layers underneath.
Yeah.
And we're riding on top of 7 inches of frozen corn, and only the top 2 inches have melted, and it's perfect skiing conditions. And we've got 5 inches of ice that are keeping us from impacting any old snow layers that are underneath. Okay. And that scenario is pretty optimal. And it's much different from, hey, we've only got a 2-inch eggshell freeze. And that happened this week where instead of having clear nights, we had a little micro storm come in and it dropped about 1 inch or 2 and it was cloudy all night. So it's like keeping a warm blanket on the snowpack so that you don't get the cooling going out into space. I'm going to stay away from jargon, but that's the gist of it. And so we had a micro freeze and it melted super quickly. And Frank and I were out and we were just, I don't know, we got like a dozen massive collapses. And in some places, we'd sink all the way through the snowpack if we were next to a trigger point, like a sagebrush and stuff like that. And then as we got higher up in the mountain, the snowpack got deeper. Instead of being like 70 cm of kind of wet, rotten facets with an eggshell freeze, it was like a proper snowpack at like 1.20 meters and then even deeper. And that lessened and lessened and lessened. And so we want to be very careful that we know, one, how thick is this ice bridge we're on that's protecting us from the weak layers underneath? And two, do we have weak layers underneath? And so in different snow climates, like if you're in the Arctic, like Norway or Iceland, they can get rain every month of the year. And so that snowpack is often ice hardness or pencil hardness. And so quite often in the Arctic, you'll be, you know, like waiting for it to soften the corn, and it softens and it never gets dangerous or it never gets too mushy because you're riding on top of concrete. So the whole snowpack, 2 meters, is dense, basically almost ice or completely ice. And if you contrast that to what Frank and I experienced earlier this week, we were on a really shallow snowpack. So, you know, 70 to 120 centimeters, where faceting and sugar crystals are the dominant forms. Okay. And so if that's the case, you got to hit and get, as we say in Vermont, like you got to get on it and get off of there before your bridge starts to melt, because your bridge is over a whole lot of garbage. Whereas contrast that in Iceland or Norway, where it's just rock solid underneath and you just wait for it to soften, and then you can ski corn for the next 8 hours on the same slope. And often there's no deterioration in stability or ski quality. And you're like, oh, this is so weird. And so if you look through the accidents, particularly in a continental climate, like a dry, low snow climate, like Colorado experiences, you'll often see springtime wet slab avalanches where the water trickles down until it hits the weak layer and boom, the wet slab triggers. And, you know, it's a little tricky when you're coding an accident, for instance, you know, was this an old snow problem or was it a wet snow problem? And you're like, well, the water trickled through, cause the snowpack to weaken. But when it hit the old snow problem, that's where it really took off. So, you know, it's the water weakening the bonds, but when it hits the old snow problem, it's really bad. And if you look through the accidents, you'll often see that pattern where it trickled down until it hit the old snow problem. And that resulted in the fatal avalanche.
Yeah. And also I wanted to, touch on something you said about you and Frank, as you were going higher, you're seeing the conditions change, right? And, you and I were talking about this the other day, like, just because, say, everything from 9 to 10,000 feet is awesome corn skiing and has that nice 7-inch ice bridge. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean if that slope is that doesn't mean that it's that same thickness from 10 to 11,000 or 11 to 12,000. Like, you have to actively be checking on that crust, that surface bridge. I think you were saying you were talking to some people that were like, yeah, we're going to go ski corn up at like 12,500 feet. And you're like,
north facing.
You're like, what? No, that's not how that works at all. So just because it's spring doesn't mean, if anything, now it makes the snowpack a little more, it's like all rounded, right? You get like different seasons depending on what your aspect is. So it's like,
it is hyper variable. Because oftentimes south and southwest is phenomenal corn skiing and really well developed, whereas you could go around to the north side today and find 22 inches of cold smoke. And totally. Then and you're like, oh, wow, it's hyper variable. So trying to keep a mental model in your head for snow stability is incredibly difficult. And this might help visualize it for my fruit bowl. So this is like below tree line. The lemon's near tree line, and this is above tree line. So let's say we have south east right now. So below tree line, southeast is really well corned up.
Totally.
And then at mid elevation, it's pretty well corned up, but at high elevation, not really. It's like a thin breakable crust. And for a while, that was on the persistent slab problem still. And I think they've trimmed it back in most places in Colorado on alpine southeast. So that's like 11 to 12,000 feet above tree line. So it's really important to remember you've got the elevation bands and then you've got the different aspects. And that is going to dramatically change. And maybe a story to illustrate that is, you know, I had a near-death experience in Italy in the Ortler Range. And that's exactly what happened. Below tree line, full springtime conditions. I think this was the last week in April, something like that. You know, fully developed corn. Mid elevation, like near and above tree line, south facing was corned up really well. But then in the alpine, eggshell freeze. So when we started skinning up the slope, I dug with my ice axe 3 times. And it was 7 to 5 inches of frozen corn, and we were cramponing up. And I was like, we don't have any worries. It's rock solid. And we were facing like kind of maybe west, I think, to be honest. So we were early in the day. I was like, it's not really going to heat up that much. It's fine. But then when we got way up high to the top of the pass is two things. It's higher, so it's colder. But also it's a wind tunnel. And so the wind always gets funneled through there and kept the snow from getting as hot. So we didn't have that bomber 7 to 5 inches of crust. And then we got down to like 2 to 3 inches of crust. And the skiers who were able to do kick turns, they were staying on top. But because my crew wasn't so good at kick turns, we were walking in crampons with skis on the back. And we were punching through that eggshell crust and we hit the old snow layer and got avalanched. So that is a really dramatic illustration of how I almost got the chop because I didn't have a good mental model predicting ahead that the snowpack where I am is going to be dramatically different 1500 vert, 1800 vert above me because of the wind. And because of the elevation, it's going to be significantly colder, much less corn. And that should have changed, or I should have adapted what we were doing, either turn around, but, you know, we were so close to home. I was like, oh, it'll be fine. Everybody else has trudged across this slope. It'll be great. And the other part of the group was ahead of us. And it was the last 5 minutes of a week-long tour. And then we would noodle powder down to the hotel for beers. And I was just like, oh, I'm so tired.
It's always the last, like, what? You always get an accident at the, like, a mile away from home.
I could smell the barn. And the other half of the group with the other guide was just ahead of us 5 minutes. And they had no idea we got avalanched. And, they had already passed through. And I was like, oh, it'll be fine. I'll just push through. Well, this time it wasn't fine. And so when the conditions change, our actions need to change. We need to adapt. And I failed to, and it almost cost me everything.
Well, so that's actually kind of a good, I guess not really a segue, but when we are, and you could kind of like use the mental model of like the further you go up, the thinner this sort of bridge is going to get in general.
Yeah.
But that's why we want to, you know, like we went on a tour last week and we were cutting out squares the whole way up just to check to see what we were dealing with. And as we went up, it actually went from down. And granted, we were in the flats when we did our first, you know, hole. We were filming, so we were kind of doing a show and tell. But it was about that thick, maybe 2 to 3 inches.
Yeah.
And then by the time we got up into the glades, which obviously much steeper, like you were describing.
Yeah.
We were on like a 7, almost 8 inch block that you were pulling out of the ground. So like that, in our mind, is like, okay, cool. Not only is that a really good ice bridge, but it's actually increasing as we're going up this face, which is a great sign for us. But I want to like flip-flop on that. So like because we just said two conflicting things, right? Because like in general, the higher you go, the thinner that bridge gets. Unless you're on a south face where you're like monitoring it and it's getting that direct sunlight. And then ideally, as you get higher and that sun is just beating down on it, that it's going to be thicker. Is that sort of a general rule, or what can we take away from that?
So here's where we were. We were in the mid elevation bands. We were below tree line and near tree line. And so it was warm. You know, I think we topped out at like 10,500 feet, something like that.
Yeah.
So we were not up in the alpine, and it's very sheltered from the wind. So the dominant factor was the slope angle, not the elevation. Okay. And so when the sun was coming in on the flats, most of that radiation hits at an oblique angle and bounces off. And then we started climbing, and it gets ever so gently steeper. And we were like 19 degrees, and we got like 5 inches up of frozen corn. And then when we got up to like 29, 30 degrees, the hill got steeper, even though we were going higher. And so it's a little bit cooler during the daytime. The slope angle trumped the modest elevation gain, because we were only climbing, I think we climbed 1,400 vertical feet, something like that. Not that much, maybe 1,300. So then it was the slope angle facing southwest, and it was like about 30 to 40 degrees on the steep stuff we were skiing. And that stuff gets cooked. And that's exactly why we went there. Steep southwest facing, below tree line, near tree line was the sweet spot. We didn't have to tangle with the persistent slab problem. Primo riding conditions, really low stress, high rewards.
Tight. Hey, so I want to talk about like a term that gets thrown around a lot with spring skiing, which is isothermic. Can you? I like, just gonna be fully honest, that term means nothing to me. I don't know what people start throwing that around, and I like glaze over. So can you either?
I fucking hate jargon because
can
it's
you
a
explain
wall.
It to me?
It's like
explain it to me, like, or
excluding people from the conversation by using jargon.
Yes.
So let's break it down to the roots. ISO means equal.
Yeah.
Thermic temperature. Okay. So they're saying the snowpack is all the same temperature. And if you think about it, you're like, okay, so the earth is putting out heat. It's at like 48 degrees, give or take, depending on where you are. And that heat goes through the snowpack. And if you have a thin snowpack, less than a meter and a half, it causes the vapor to move in weird ways. And it causes it to maybe be more vertically oriented, you could say. And so if you put your hands over your mouth like Darth Vader, like,
Luke, I'm your father.
So that's the water vapor, and it will form facets, form diamonds. And those do not want to hang out together. It's like the worst party you've ever been to. Like, nobody is close. It's cold. There's no dancing going on. There's no connections being formed. You're like,
it's an undersold concert.
Say it again.
It's an undersold concert.
Yeah.
Those are the worst. Yeah. Nobody's there.
Contrast that to a deeper, warmer snowpack over 1.5 meters. And particularly if you're in a place like the Northwest or Sierras, you know, it's going to be a lot warmer than Colorado. You don't get minus 20, minus 30 very often. And so in that case, it's like the best party you've ever been at. And like, people are hugging each other. Social bonds are being formed. There's a lot of moisture and sweat and saliva being passed back and forth and other stuff. And people are tight. And that's when they form up tight bonds and you get rounding. Okay. And when the snowpack is closer to being the same temperature, the moisture, the water vapor goes side to side, and we lock elbows like Red Rover, Red Rover, send that facet over. We're going to stomp them. And so that's what's happening in the springtime on all aspects as it gets warmer, but it happens quicker on the sunny aspects than it does on the shady aspects. So our mental model, it's really tricky. You're like, okay, things are trending towards rounding. So those facets in the snowpack are starting to actually have a good time and become socially engaged and bond together. But you have to be careful because you might just have a really shallow snowpack all winter that's just rotten sugar with a very thin eggshell freeze over the top. And you're like, oh, it's springtime, we're good to go. And you're like, oh, not so fast. Easy there, cowboy. You might have a good enough freeze to be low danger in the morning, but very quickly, as that bridge melts, let's say we've got a 5-inch bridge over garbage. As long as you're like on a couple inches of ice, and I can't give you an exact number, but you know, you're doing pretty well. But this is where it gets really tricky. As you ski lower down the mountain, the snowpack is getting thinner. It's probably got more facets in it. That's what we experienced this week. As we got lower, it went from like 150, 120, 70. And when you hit 70, it was just like garbage, trapdoor, and crashing through. And at night, we didn't get as much of a freeze because it was a little bit lower. When the clouds come in, higher elevations are going to be colder with a better freeze. And lower elevation is going to be warmer with a less freeze when you have clouds or snow. And so you could be skiing this big 3,000 plus foot line and be like, oh, let's do an extra lap up top. The corn's awesome. And you're riding on 2 meters of snow that's predominantly rounded and well bonded and really dense. And then you're like, okay, it's time to go home. It's getting too mushy. And then you're like, oh shit, we have overstayed our welcome at this party, and we are crashing the party, and we are trapdooring to our knees, to our boot tops, to our thighs in wet, rotten facets with a tiny, rickety, think of like a rope bridge in, you know, like the jungle with rotten slats, and your foot breaks through and you're like, this bridge can't hold shit. And that certainly has happened to me where I'm like, oh, I totally blew it. We're here way too late because the upper slopes were really deep and supportive snowpack with a really good freeze. And as we got lower, the temp is going up and the snowpack is getting shallower and we are hosed. Oh man, this is a horrible feeling.
Yeah. So that's an interesting, that makes me think of another question. So if you're going to do, the other day we were skiing a pitch with Frank and it was, I don't know what, 900 feet, 1,000 feet.
Yep.
So like, that's all kind of in one zone.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the same pitch down to the road. And then we parked the sled a little bit up out of the danger zone.
Yep.
And so like in that case, you know, we're not really, or at least this is my understanding, tell me if I'm wrong, because that face and that zone is just not that big, we're not going to face a huge amount of difference from the top to the bottom. And that's why that's okay. Correct. that that slope kind of was just the same angle and then done. Whereas if you're going to do a bigger,
because that slope was pretty much like this. It was like 35 to 38 degrees the whole time. And then you hit the valley floor.
Exactly.
And it was in that mid elevation range of near tree line, super predictable. The only thing that could change on that, because the slope angle is steady, the aspect was due south, that was steady, is sometimes you get ridge top winds, right? And that may, in my near-death experience with an avalanche, that was the big change, was the wind just honks through there and doesn't let it corn up. But we had calm winds, and you were flying the drone, no problem. You know, it was barely a breath of wind.
But that's not, so my question was this, if you're going to go higher up, ski like a 2000 foot descent or something like that.
We're talking loco and I like it.
But like, would it be better to look for something where each maybe 800 feet or whatever is slowly mellowing out as you go down so that even though that crust is getting thinner, you're lowering your slope angle, essentially, right? Am I wrong about that?
Getting more solar radiation near tree line facing south, and then it gets a little flatter mid and flatter still. So it's getting less solar radiation when you're down near the valley floor. Yeah, that would be optimal. That would be optimal. Right. No wind.
You're kind of
no wind because wind messes it all up.
And that would be sort of covering your base, like, covering your bases on two fronts, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Because you're accounting for the fact that as we get lower, that crust will get thinner probably as it's flattening out. But because it's flattening out, the chance of, even if we do punch through that crust, you know, our chance of triggering something is much, much less likely.
Yeah. And right now, the other variable to play with would be aspect as well. So let's say this is our volcano. We can ski any aspect we want.
By the way, we'll be selling all of these items in Jeff's house at auction as a part of a kit of how you can explain to your friends avalanche danger in the springtime.
Yeah. Actually, Ortovox has this really cool thing. You can check it out online where it's like this little kind of like train set almost, but of a mountain. So you can visualize all these concepts and play with it. Because holding in your head, it's really difficult. And this is, and we'll, to be fair, to, if you're struggling with this, that's okay. Because when I'm examining guides, they're struggling with this too, of what elevation band am I at? What aspect am I on? What's the unique weather conditions at all of those? And where are the 24 slices of the critical blacked out danger zones that form up the problem distribution? So if they're worried about wet, loose and wet slab on the sunny side and persistent slab, dry snow problems on the shady side, that's 48 slices of the pie to hold in your head. And you're worried about ski quality and about safety, about the stability. It is really hard. And, you know, shameless product plug, that's where Aspect Avi makes it so easy to brain dump and help support the user by crunching that data for you. And then you can focus on the snow quality and being like, ah, we're going to ski east in the morning, and then we're going to ski southeast, south, southwest, and finally west. And heck, we may finish off with a quick lap north to get it home, and it might be dry powder and everything else was corn.
All right, sweet. So maybe I have one last question. We're talking about like corn and these ice bridges and stuff. Mm. And the other day when we were going up ski touring, you know, we're walking through Aspen Glades.
Yeah.
And I punched my pole through and it got like stuck next to a tree. So it made me think, where are the places when we are skiing in the spring? Because I kind of want to disperse. I don't know. Get rid of this myth that like spring skiing is just safer. Dispel. Thank you. Yes, there are things about spring skiing that are safer, but it's not just across the board safe.
Yeah.
Where are the places when we're talking about, you know, with this ice bridge, like where are the places we still want to look out for on our ski tours?
Yeah. So let's think of it this way. if this piece of ginger.
Dude, how much stuff do you have on your table right now?
I don't know. I'm getting a bit peckish. It's time for second breakfast, secondsies. And if anybody knows me, they know I'm a bit ravenous. I have to keep that tapeworm happy. So let's say this is a tree, okay? Like an aspen or spruce. So in your level one avalanche class, they'll be like, hey, here's what happens. The heat from the center of the earth is coming up and going through the snowpack. And when it's a shallow snowpack, you're going to get faceting because of that heat driving the way the vapor moves in the snowpack between the ice crystals. Now, if you have a tree or a bush, it's like a radiator in your house, and it radiates the heat in 360 degrees. So anytime in the winter time, when you put your pole in or you put your probe in, it's going to be a lot of facets around the tree, unless you're in a super deep, warm snowpack like the Sierras or the Cascades. And when people say trees are anchors, you're like, no. And all you got to do is put your hand in there, and maybe you're in a 2 meter snowpack that's really warm, and it gets a lot of rain, and you dig down in there and you're like, oh, actually it's true. It's ice and rounds. Okay. Fair enough. But in a shallow snowpack where it's cold, less than a meter and a half, you're going to see way more facets around a willow bush, sagebrush, a tree. That's just how it is. And it's kind of like on a math problem where you have to show your work and you're like, hey, you got the right answer. The forest is helping with stability, however, totally wrong method. And the reason why those trees are helping with stability is that the tree bombs, when they fall off, and some of these can be 5 pounds and some of them can be 20 pounds and like jack your neck up, like really scary. They're coming down when it gets warm or windy and they bomb the layers of weak facets on top. And they totally break it up. So this has often happened to me where it's like super sketchy conditions, considerable or high danger. And I'm in a meadow in a clearing in the forest. And there's like a few Charlie Brown Christmas trees there. And it's, you know, an intermediate could ride through there. And you cannot isolate the column without it collapsing and landing on your lap. It's that hair trigger. But you go 100 feet into the dense old growth forest where only an expert can ride through because it's pretty tight. And those tree bombs break up the weak layer. And keep in mind, we just got a big dump of snow on the pass at 22 inches. Where is most of that snow? A lot of it is up in the canopy. So it's taking the pressure off the snowpack. So instead of getting a wallop of 22 inches of weight and the snow water equivalent, call that 2 inches of water, you might only be getting half of that on the snowpack. So it stresses it much less. And the caveat is it's got to be really dense old growth forest. Lodgepole pines, they don't hold much up in the branches, but like spruce or like cedar, that's awesome. And they really can make this snow stability of the snowpack much, much more in our favor, much more stable, to the point where you dig a pit and you cannot get it to fail. Then you go out into the open clearing where there's no tree bombs at all. And the full weight of the storm is hitting the snowpack. And it's the total opposite end of the spectrum. The column is failing at the wrist and it's propagating across the whole thing. And you're like, holy cow, this matches up with the forecast of the worst, worst conditions possible to be expected.
Right on. That actually makes a lot of sense. But isn't that a little more in general of like a normal snowpack? If we're talking about a spring snowpack where we have that ice bridge. Mm-hmm. And then, so when we're dealing with that kind of snowpack, where are the exact zones? Say we're on a 35 degree slope, things are looking good. If we're looking, you know, if we're looking at a nice kind of double black diamond, but it's a nice open kind of face.
35 to 40 degrees.
But what would, when we're dealing with that overall crust layer, what would we still want to be wary of in that condition?
So these are my special X-ray vision glasses. And so we look through the snowpack and you can see the bushes, the stumps, the logs, the rocks, the ledges. Those are all radiators sending out fat heat around them in every direction, even after they're buried or mostly buried, just poking through, just the tip. And those facets are going to take a long time to transform. And you may have a really good uniform slope, and there's a few landmines kicking around the slope. And as you melt through that bridge, you can access those wet facets that haven't switched over and become melt freeze crust, which is like a mechanical process. It's changing from a solid to a liquid and then refreezing to a solid. And then facets are about the vapor changing and exchanging, where you have ice crystals exchanging vapor. And it's pretty tacky, but like you can watch ice evaporate on an ice climb over a long dry spell. It's really wild. It doesn't melt. It just goes straight to gas and it's gone. You're like, whoa, that's weird. So keep in mind.
So would there be, would
if you're on the slope and it looks pretty uniform and it's wide open, like smooth snow versus, oh, I'm seeing on the edge of that uniform slope, a whole bunch of bushes and rock ledges, man, I'm staying away from that. Especially if we're starting to melt through our bridge and we're like, ooh, it's getting a little late to be here. We got to get out of here. It's the bridge is melting. We need to get out of here. You know, you can't see everything under the surface, but if you see a couple shark fins sticking up with rocks or bushes and sagebrush, that's where you're most likely to punch through, because it's not rounds underneath. It's probably going to be a mixture of facets and melt freeze crust, and it's going to be weaker than the deep uniform snowpack that's predominantly rounded and has a smooth, strong crust on top.
So kind of like, to sum that up, the later in the day you get, the more that top ice bridge, whatever we're calling it, is melting through, maybe the further away, you know, you want to stay from those potential shark fins, or, you know, it almost seems like a reverse puddle.
Reverse puddle? What does that mean? I've never heard that.
Well, just thinking about, you know, if you have like a rock or a stump or something under it, you can kind of imagine that there's going to be this facet, almost dome around it or near it.
Right. That's a great way of picturing
it. The thinnest at the top.
Yeah.
Thinnest at the top. And then like, so as that, you know, say this rock is 2 feet across, but as we are melting through that, you know, that corn, that nice crusty layer, the further away you'd want to stay because that puddle is kind of getting bigger.
Yeah, that's a great way of visualizing it. And of course, what gets really tough is when we can't use our X-ray vision glasses. Like the shark's fins on the top, those are the sharks that are easy to avoid.
You can see it.
Poking out. Yep. But the hidden ones. And quite often when you see a crown of an avalanche, the shark's fins were like a couple inches below the surface and they were able to access that old snow sugary layer there.
Right.
And you just couldn't see it. But yeah, you're right. And timing is absolutely critical of like, am I in the right place at the right time? And sometimes the forecast is wrong. Like when Frank and I went out, I was expecting it to be 7 inches of rock hard frozen corn. And instead we got this freak little snow shower that came through with 1 to 2 inches and the clouds just stayed all night. And it was like a warm blanket.
Mm.
So we didn't get that kind of like, you know, 17, 15 degree temperature at night. It was more like high 20s and the new snow helped insulate and it just didn't freeze deep. And here's a wacky thing.
Right.
Heat can penetrate the snowpack and cause the water to percolate down through, and you'll get icicles in the snowpack. And these are called percolation columns. We can just call them icicles. Like let's kill that's, jargon.
And just to be clear, that's like literally icicles hanging off of that crusty layer that we want to be skiing on.
Yeah. If this is the crusty layer,
okay.
The icicles, it's not like the water goes through uniformly. It's incredibly variable. And this is batshit crazy. This freaked me the hell out. If you look at some great papers, when they talk about wet slab cycles and predicting them, usually it's 2 to 3 nights with no freeze in the spring and really warm temperatures. And what you'll see is the stream gauges are a really accurate predictor. And the stream gauges, actually peak? It's not during the day. It's at night. Because the water takes forever to percolate through. I don't know. It'd be really cool to put Kool-Aid through and like some phosphorescent dye. And I'm sure somebody's done it.
Totally.
It takes this long. So when I was snowcat guiding up at Irwin, we had a lot of west-facing terrain that was big and steep with these big cliff bands. And you would go out in the morning and you'd put your hand on the rock. And you're like, oh, it's still hot. Oh, that's fucked up. And so what happens is, if this is my rock onto my 40 degree slope, it is soaking up so much heat because it's on a steep slope and it's radiating that heat throughout the night. And as the water goes down into the snowpack, it will hit a crust layer that acts like a tin roof and pushes the water down the slope until it finds a crack in the roof and trickles down. And it is really difficult to predict how the water's moving through the snowpack and for how long. And just because it got to freezing that night, if you've got a lot of rocks in your snowpack, it may keep melting throughout the night. And those trigger points become really pronounced and the water pools in strange ways. And if you dig into the snowpack, you'll start to see that, where you'll start to see those icicles be in really weird places and the water pool like in these crazy puddles. And you're just like, whoa, this is so hyper variable. I want to make sure I'm on a really thick bridge, 5 to 7 inches, and I'm only skiing on maybe 2 inches of perfect corn on top that's melted. And I've got a lot of ice to support me because there is a whole lot of chaos happening under my feet that's almost unimaginable. And I think it's really important to dispel the myth that as a mountain guide or an avalanche forecaster, we have a mental model of what the snowpack is doing, but my God, that thing is a black box. And this is like Schrodinger's cat, like physics stuff, where when you put the cat in the black box, you never really know if it's alive or dead. You're not sure what's going on in there. And we can make generalizations and simplify like these mental models of, hey, south and southwest is really strong corn right now, but every slope is different. And there's so many variables, it's really hard to know with absolute certainty. And when it's a huge red flag for me, when someone is absolutely certain and they're like, I feel good about this, I feel very confident, that is a full stop. Like, we need to talk this out because that is a walking human factor trap. Because I'm sorry, like, as you get older, you just realize the world is infinitely complex compared to what you thought it was when you was a kid, when things were very simple, black and white. It's either go or no go. And now you're like, whoa, okay, there's so much going on under the surface that unless we're digging like 10 pits on that slope, we really don't have much idea. We can make these generalizations. So when we were digging, and I probably dug, I don't know, 5-6 pits on a 1400 vertical climb, because I wanted to gather
information. Wait, let's be clear. We didn't dig like snow pits. We were digging out blocks.
Sorry. Yeah. So what I was
doing. I don't want to confuse. We did a whole podcast about how snow pits are not
as reliable
as you think. I don't want to confuse people.
And having your ice axe tucked in to your haul loop right behind your back is clutch. Like a shovel, it's really hard to stow a shovel quickly, but guides do this all the time and you can go shing and bring your sword out, chop, chop, chop. And it takes you 30 seconds. And now you're starting to see the pattern and being like, oh, what's the slope angle and what's the aspect and how many inches crust am I seeing and what's underneath it and how quickly am I melting through? So if I know, okay, this slope is super consistent, like you described, it's 1,000 vertical feet and it's all pretty much the same slope angle. And I'm seeing very consistent 7-inch crust. I'm like, okay, but I need quite a few data points.
Right.
And then it becomes, all right, I'm feeling more confident because the data suggests that it is consistent. But if you're on a slope with lots of different slope angles and it's 3,000 vertical feet and it changes aspects, I'm like, oh man, I got to gather a lot of data to start to have some confidence that it's representative of what we're trusting our lives to. Think of this. Have you ever been into a building like a skyscraper made of steel? And that steel is just a degree or two away from its melting point. That's what we're doing with snow. It's kind of fucking nuts.
Well, I've definitely never been into a melting skyscraper, Jeff. I don't know what kind of stuff you're doing on your free time, man, but you're way more extreme than me. All right. Well, that's kind of a good, let's really quickly, you just mentioned ice axes and stuff, because there is kind of different gear that we want for spring skiing, right?
Yeah.
Ski crampons are a really great, useful tool, which is hilarious.
I never used them
until I met you. Us Americans, we got to get on this ski crampon thing. It's sweeping the nation. It's awesome. Having an ice axe is clutch.
Yeah. Just,
when we were out there, I can tell you that you were pulling out giant blocks in about 20 seconds with an ice axe, where probably would have taken a minute or two to do with a shovel just because of the way that works.
Yeah.
What are other pieces of gear that people should think about or are really useful for specifically for spring skiing?
Those are the key ones. You hit them right there. Okay. And ski crampons, like if you're coming out with a guide to do a hut trip, they are mandatory gear in the Alps. Like nobody leaves the valley floor without ski crampons. That's just how it is. And for some reason, Americans are really slow. They're like the telemarkers, and I'm a recovering telemarker. Like, there's better gear out there. They just choose to ignore it. And so it's safety. Here's the three keys. It's safety, so you don't slide off the mountain and hit something. And this is a big thing in the springtime. If you're on like a 35 degree slope and steeper, like a double black diamond, you're not going to stop. And I know experienced climbers who I've climbed like El Cap with, and that's how they died, was sliding on corn snow until they went over a cliff or a rock. And it's just like, hey, you know, you got to have this gear and you got to think about what's below you. And, you know, ironically, when I got avalanched, that's why we were in boot crampons, because my guys weren't super fluid on steep skinning and with ski crampons. Mm. So we're like, all right, we got to go boot crampons. And ironically, it caused us to punch through. So ski crampons are pretty clutch. They make kick turns and steep slopes so much more comfortable, safe, and efficient. And the key is always put the ski crampons on before you need them. If you're like, oh man, this is really sketchy, you are hosed. You want to find a flat place to put it on. And it's the same thing with boot crampons. If you're like, man, this slope is getting really steep, if we blow a turn here, even with ski crampons, we are gone. It's like, okay, we need to dig out a platform with the axe, because I've got it holstered here and I can just go shing, chop out a flat platform, take off the uphill ski first, always have the downhill ski on for safety, and then get a flat spot, put my crampons on, skis on the back, and away we go. And the axe and crampons, oftentimes, you know, like the beer can aluminum ones for spring corn, are more than enough. And that might weigh, oh, I don't know, less than 2 pounds for both of them. They're pretty light.
Your axes are freaky light. Every time I pick one up, I think that there's a glitch in the matrix or something.
It's like floating away. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, this is like balloons weigh this much. All right, cool, man. Well, let's leave everyone with, do you want to just do a really, really quick recap? Do you think you can do it? Like, of just, what are the key takeaways? Yeah. Stretch it out, bro. Stretch it out. Key takeaways and then things that we want to just, things that we want to look out for when we're skiing in the spring.
There's our perception of what's happening in the snowpack in reality. And so we're going to have to gather information to update our perception to make it match reality. And in the springtime, it's changing fast over the course of a week and even in the course of a few hours. In fact, I'm stressing hard because that sun is going to cook my powder out there right now. And we're going out for a hot lunch lap. So we need to be very adaptive to the conditions. and we need to consider our three elevation bands and the slope angle to the sun. Is it flat? Is it middle? Or is it steep? We also need to consider the aspect. So it's a lot to hold in our head. And that's where aspect, Abby, really helps you with the snow stability part. So you can focus on where's the best riding. And I find, even as a super expert, I've been doing this for 20 years, man, it is nice to offload a lot of that so I can focus on moving my team through the terrain as safely as possible and maximizing our rewards. I can really focus on the good snow and moving my team through the terrain safely, as opposed to how do I hold all those variables in my head? And I'm sorry for the shameless product plug, but I've just seen so many guides that I'm examining struggle with it. And I'm like, what aspect are we on? And they're like, I think we're, and I'm like, don't think, check. You know, they're like, I don't want to hear guesswork. You got to be constantly checking in. There's a great phrase when you're navigating. It's like, if you don't know where you are all the time, you're kind of lost. Like, you don't want to be like, man, where the heck are we? It's time to pull out the map or the phone. It's like, no, you really need to know what aspect and elevation band you're on at all times and what the rewards and what the risk is going to be for being in that spot. That's the big concepts. And then nuts and bolts, how thick is the bridge? And is it over garbage or is it over concrete? And how deeply am I melting in? And so I will put my fingers into the snow like this. And the first knuckle, hey, that's pretty good riding. And we haven't lost hardly any stability. Second knuckle, oh, que bellissima. It's the best riding. Second knuckle, that's phenomenal riding. And we're still looking pretty good on stability. But then when you get up to the third knuckle, the riding is going down and the stability is going down. And it's like, we're too late. Time to get out of here. Let's go change aspect. Let's change elevation. Let's get out of here. Or the slope angle.
Nice.
Those are my top tips. Man. How to find good snow like a guide and come home to your family.
I mean, those are pretty good tips. I got one last question for you, actually. Made me think of something. So because we're in this, we were in a very warm cycle.
Yeah.
And then it kind of cooled off over the last couple of days. It's still not crazy cold, but definitely cooled off. And now we're starting to get, you know, we got 8 inches last night. It's going to be kind of like clear today, but then we're supposed to have consistent snow going into the weekend. If we know we have that old frozen layer, that ice bridge there, and then now we have, say, a foot of fresh snow over a couple of days, how does that change the way we travel?
Then I'm psyched because I'm like, hey, we just got a foot of new snow over 7 inches of frozen corn. Hey, we can check easily to see if it's bonded well with our hands. Does it slide off a steel roof? Ooh, that's not good. Or is it stuck on there pretty well? And we're skiing on 7 inches of concrete. We don't need to ski where the persistent slab problem is on the shady aspects if we get on it right away. And that's why I was like, oh, I'm skiing west today with Eli at Romp Skis, and we got to get on it right now before it gets cooked. It's like the clock is ticking.
Well, on that note, then I'll let you go skiing, man. I'm going to edit this podcast. So enjoy your time outside. And you got any final words, man?
Yeah. The conditions are super variable in the springtime with big temperature swings from well below freezing to well above and intense solar as the sun gets more intense this time of year. So we need to adapt our behavior to the rapidly changing conditions and be very flexible with our mental model. Like, for instance, what we just talked about, if the storm comes in during the day, that corn snow may not have frozen. It's really hard for cold to penetrate deeper in the snowpack than, say, about 8 to 10 inches. The cold just can't really get through unless it's cold for many, many days. And that doesn't usually happen in the springtime. Usually it's hot during the day, cold at night. So it's got like this I don't know, 10-hour window in which for the coal to penetrate and refreeze. So you got to constantly be checking, and you can do that really quickly with an ice axe or a probe and check that, you know, top foot of the snowpack of, am I over garbage or concrete? How thick is the ice bridge? And how many knuckles have I melted down? One knuckle, okay. Two knuckles, that's primo and time to wrap it up. Three knuckles, we're too late. Time to go.
My final question to you is, can I borrow an ice axe for my hut trip this weekend?
For shizzle. I'll get you set up.
Sick. All right, Jeff. Well, enjoy your time outside.
All right.
And we'll see you next week, man.
All right.
Adios.
Stay safe out there, folks. And we'll see you in the backcountry.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Aspects. If you like what we're doing here, please leave a rating and review. It really is the best way to help others find the show. Thanks again to our business daddy, Aspect Abbey, for making this show possible. To learn more about how Aspect Abbey is making avalanche safety simple, go to aspectabbey.com. If you want to use this powerful new tool on your next backcountry adventure, simply download the app from the App Store and enjoy 30 days free on them. Lastly, special thanks to Ice Lab for helping us produce this show. You guys rock, and we couldn't do it without you. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the backcountry.